everything eventually comes down to a choice. In such a big world, so many choices. Here, in this little lost place, things are simpler. You'll find it because you are meant to. And inside, you'll find my lift and me. I'll take you where you need to go, and then you choose. Once you do, things will get much better. Or much worse. Find the lift at victoriouslift.com and also in iTunes at itunes.victoriouslift.com. Before you listen to this podcast, be aware this show often uses very naughty language. If you don't like that, you shouldn't listen. Send your complaints to I Am a Whiny Baby with No Sense of Humor at nightstory.com. Or stop by the studio. I'll take you for a ride to a story of my choosing.
Speaking of balls.
My guest today, the deceased Harry Carey.
Hi.
I hear they call you Whiskers. Why is that?
They don't call me Whiskers anymore.
What do they call you?
I'm the man of the moon.
You're Andy Kaufman.
I like cheese.
I once had a big ball of cheese.
I like things cheese shaped balls.
I like things shaped like balls. I do. They're easier to put your mouth.
With a cold Coors Light. Cheese ball.
This summer, Budweiser is called America.
Okay.
Enjoy your beer, America.
America.
Fucking pretentious bastards.
They legitimately changed
this
right?
This represents... What's that? Yeah, just for the summer or something like that.
So stupid.
Oh, that's so awesome. Thank you very much, Dan. You made my night.
Once upon a time, come along as we examine the many things that combine to create the magic that is story. Next stop, the Ninth Story.
Welcome to the Ninth Story Podcast, Greg.
I feel welcomed.
Yeah. People don't know who the hell you are because that's how I'm starting the show.
Oh.
Like, who's this Greg guy? Hi, Greg. Greg was outside, and I said,
walking by.
I said, you look like an interesting guy. Why don't you come in? We're doing a podcast tonight.
And I said, hey, sure.
And it turns out Greg is actually a graphic designer. Wow. Isn't that fantastic?
It is fantastic.
It's tremendous.
I take money for design. I feel like such a whore.
Longtime listeners of the show will know that I say two things too often, tremendous and fantastic. So it has now become a joke, and we're trying to stop that because it's like ear rape every time that's said, isn't it? It's like awful. You just like, stop it. Stop saying tremendous. Stop it. I'm going to turn this off if you don't stop saying tremendous. Tremendous.
I think at this point you're just saying it just to say it.
I know.
You wanted to get it.
I'm trying to. Well, every time I say it, I owe Jeanette a dollar. What are we up to now? I haven't been keeping track.
$10. I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay. Well, so the audience can keep track. They can send us messages via Twitter and tell me how much money I owe you for this buddy, episode.
Every time Dan says tremendous, drink.
Oh man, you'd be fucked up in like 10 minutes.
Is this a drinking podcast? I've been on one of those.
Apparently, now it is.
It's more fun this way to learn about story and how to become a better working artist in the world out there.
Yeah,
is that the tagline for the podcast?
Drink more?
No,
think less.
No, what Jeanette just said.
What did Jeanette just say?
She said something about being a better artist.
I know what she said.
I was listening. I can't quote her, but...
I don't listen to my show.
Yes, you do. You do listen to your show.
Only when I'm editing.
Yes.
I listen to my show a lot, more than I want to. I listen to my show more than normal people do.
I do listen to the episodes that I'm on of other shows.
Do you?
Yes.
You like to hear the sound of your own voice?
Sometimes I'm laughing.
It's kind of like masturbation, isn't it? To like listen to yourself on another podcast and be like, I was there and now I can hear it.
I actually do laugh at some of the things that I say when I'm on a podcast.
Good for you. Yeah, I'm hilarious. Listen to me go.
I'm funny.
Oh, listen to me go. I'm so goddamn funny. I can't help it. Oh, I'm adorable. You know what? Maybe I can be friends with me.
Yes.
You know, that's like you can listen to this show and you'd be like, that guy's famous. I can be his friend. We can hang out. We can drink. We're going to be buddies.
I can get a Twitter account and follow myself on Facebook. So I'm good.
Yeah, well, it came true for Jeanette. We're friends now. Yeah. So I think it's the other way around.
How did you guys meet anyway?
On Twitter. Oh, right. Didn't I? I think Jeanette posted something and I said, this is fantastic. Or tremendous, or something like that.
Probably.
You messaged me. You were like, I really like your artwork. I'm like, oh, I really like your show.
And that was probably followed with, can you do something for my show? And you were just like, shit.
Okay.
No, actually it wasn't. I just, I saw something that she created and I thought it was awesome. So I sent her a message. And
here you are.
That's correct.
Now we're BFFs for Fs.
That's right. Oh, isn't that wonderful?
You were going to say it.
Tremendous,
you didn't.
Even.
She was a fan of the show. I was like, wow, I have one of those?
You probably have a lot of fans. You've been running your show longer than
the kids. Into the ground.
It's been going for a while. Like, Night Story was literally one of the first podcasts I ever downloaded once I figured out what podcasts finally were.
And why did you download that specific podcast?
Storytelling.
Yeah.
Actually. And then what caught my attention was the whole like Victoria intro because it was creepy and delightful. And I was like, oh, I learned stuff and there's a creepy British child. Cool.
I find things are better with a creepy British child.
Wow. I'm going to have to cut that out of the show.
Oh. Yeah. Victoria, what do you have to say about that?
As we say on the Caveman Mafia, 3, 2, 1, go.
3, 2, 1, and go.
Start that over again.
Redo.
So, buttons.
Buttons.
And we're done. Thanks and for coming by, Greg.
Great.
It was a great show. It was a lot of fun.
I'm going to go walk.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your input, Greg. Yes. That was amazing.
Yeah, everything that you recorded that Dan didn't record.
Yeah, we'll just put that at the end. It'll be a bonus.
Except all I record is my own audio because... Oh.
So yeah. It's like the Garfield comics without Garfield in them. Did you ever see that? That's hilarious. They take Garfield out of all the Garfield comics, so it's just like John talking to himself. It's hilarious.
That's funny.
So that'd be about accurate then.
Like you just talking to yourself.
It is weird. Like when I've edited shows before, and this is not you, but like when I've edited interviews before, I treat the audio separately for both sides. So we have the left side, which is the local, and I should probably do that. It's going to sound weird when I do this, Greg, but we'll do it when we actually really start the show.
Is it going to tickle?
Pretty much.
Okay.
So I record the local audio on the left channel and I record the remote audio on the right channel. See, left, okay. Right.
Right. I got
local,
it.
Remote. So I remember which one is which, but when you edit each side separately, because there's different sound on the remote side than there is on the local side, and you treat each side differently for audio processing and noise cleaning and that sort of thing. It's weird to listen to either my half of the conversation by itself or the other person's, because it's just like really quiet. And then sometimes you'll hear like somebody will just like cough or, like little noises that they make that. And it's just weird. It's like you can picture that person just sitting alone in the room and the only sound is their voice. So like if I'm sitting next to them, that's like all I would hear is just half of the conversation. It's creepy in a kind of a way.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Dan, I'm whispering into this for you later.
I didn't hear a word you just said.
You'll hear it later.
I heard something about later. Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to start making like creepy noises into the microphone when you're actually talking so that you just hear that randomly when you're editing.
Wonderful. That sounds like a lot of fun. A lot more work for me.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah.
We don't mind you having more work.
You didn't have enough.
All right. Well, maybe we'll actually start the show here.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm on a right channel.
You are.
I can hear myself in the
right. You can hear yourself on the left side, unless your headphones are on backwards.
Are they on backwards?
You're in my right ear.
Hey, ooh. Now I'm in the left ear. You're in my right ear.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I am or she is?
You are.
How am I in your right ear?
You just told me to switch the thing around.
I don't get it.
Could I, hold on. You want?
You and I should both be on the left side.
Yes.
Okay. Well, there we go.
So you're on my right side, but that's only because this side doesn't work.
See? You're in my right side, Jeanette.
Well, there you go.
It's perfect. It works out wonderful. Your headphones don't work?
On this side, because the wire down here needs to get reattached.
Well, I'll just send you new headphones then.
Cool.
I sent her the microphone she has. So
you did, and I've been using it a lot.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So welcome to episode number 411 of the Night Story Podcast. I am Dan Foytek.
I'm Jeanette Andromeda. And today we have...
I'm Greg Schaefer.
You are Greg Schaefer.
Wait, that was a question. Am I Greg Schaefer?
You are.
I don't know. Are you Greg Schaefer?
So who is Greg Schaefer? That's what we're going to find out today.
That's the question.
That's the purpose of
no
today.
No one is asking.
Oh, we're asking. We're going to be asking. We're fascinated by you, Greg.
Okay.
So Greg is a graphic designer and an artist. And a graphic designer is basically an artist who makes money.
I don't give myself credit. I guess I do art. Yes.
Yes. I heard that you painted this beautiful tree.
Oh, Jesus. Not the tree story.
And someone...
I don't like you anymore, Dan.
What was it, like a week later? They painted over top of it? No, was that when you stopped later. Doing art?
No. And this involves Al.
Yes, it does. Al from the Caveman Mafia. So Greg is also, in addition to being a graphic artist, a graphic designer, graphic artist. Is graphic artist correct, too, or is...
Yes.
Okay.
Graphic artist.
Graphic designer. Web designer.
Web man. Yeah, I'm really...
Master.
I am just everybody's bitch, basically. So, yes.
Greg's talented.
I have a jack of all trades, master of none. But I know a lot of things, and I can do some things. Yes.
So you are on the Caveman Mafia podcast.
Yes. I was one of the original members, yes.
And I was on the Caveman Mafia podcast as a guest several times. We just figured out that it was 2 years ago was the first time that I was on the show.
Wow. Memories.
I know. Isn't that nice? And I listened to the show for so long prior to coming on. It was like sitting in the room with celebrities. I was like, oh, these are the guys that make me laugh and not want to quit my job. Because I had a horrible job back then.
Oh, no.
So I wanted to have Greg on for a long time, not only because Greg's funny and does fantastic voices and is a very talented designer, but mainly that because you are a storyteller. And that's what we do here is we talk about stories and storytelling. And I'll tell you why I think what you do is a very interesting form of storytelling because you only have so much room. You have like basically you do a lot of logo and mm-hmm. Design work that represents either an organization, usually it's companies, right, that you do work for. So basically that company has to tell its story through that one image that they're going to see. That's going to be kind of like what you see when you go to their website. It's their brand, their identity. And I think that that's one of the things that we as creators, as artists and writers and storytellers, we have this thing that we create and we want to get it out there into the world and we want people to hopefully buy it.
Right.
And I think that we are sometimes very bad at understanding the importance of branding. So I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about web design today and talk a little bit about graphic design and the importance of coming up with a good, solid brand that is consistent. Like you don't use one thing on your website and another thing whenever you're on Twitter. You kind of try to keep everything so it's branded and tied together.
Right.
So that it's recognizable. But more than that, it's to me, it's kind of almost like poetry because you have very, very little room and you have essentially a very condensed way of telling a story. It's not like when you write something, I have as many pages as I want or as many pages as people will read or listen to before they get bored. You have a very short amount of time, usually a few words and you know, a strong core image. Right. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, with artists, like, you know, like Jeanette doing her artwork, which is like digital. What would you consider digital painting? Is that what you consider that?
I would consider it digital painting because I kept trying to do the Illustrator, the actual Illustrator program, and just failing miserably. So I was like, you know what? Fine. I'm going to do what I do on paper, but on a computer screen.
Right.
And so it's
quite amazing.
Thank you.
But how do you brand that? So
That's a good question.
There is a big disconnect between artists doing their own artwork and having a style, and then marketing that artwork as an artist. So you see, like, your artwork. I mean, what can you do to market yourself better? Most people that are in your position pay somebody. They have a marketing person or a public relation person that can go out and get their stuff seen. Because if your artwork is not seen, nobody's going to care what your logo is. Nobody's going to come to your site or go to your Facebook. If Dan writes stories and nobody reads them and nobody can get them in, if he can't get them into people's hands, if he's not going to storytelling events where people are getting to listen to his stuff and he has some kind of following that can get people involved past that point, it's very difficult. So for me, as a graphic designer, if you came into my shop, we'd have to really, I think before you even get into a graphic design standpoint, because you have the artwork. Like, for a writer, they don't have artwork. They have words. So for you, with me working with you, it'd be easier because you have stuff to make it. You're making pretty artwork. So people want to see it. And you can use that, and it would integrate into your website, integrate into your printing materials, posters, pull up banners or whatever if you're at any shows. And your artwork itself could be, you know, on display just as it is.
Right.
So it's easier for artwork to be marketed because it translates into web and print. Right.
Hard. Yeah. With what you do, like, if you were to go with a visual artist, it'd be a little bit easier for you to find the essence of who they are, because most artists tend to have some sort of a style, whether they know it or not.
Right.
But, like, if you were to approach, say, Dan's stuff, like, if, you know, his writing specifically, how do you get to the core of, like, visually, like, if you were to make a brand for Dan as an author, how would you go about figuring out what his visual logo would be or what his visual essence is? That's what I feel like a logo is. It's like trying to be all of the things at once.
Well, with Dan's stuff in particular, he already has one. He's gone with a concept, and that's easy to build off. If he came to me and he had Victoria, and like I've built logos for him. I've helped him with some things. It's easy. That stuff's easy because he already has a feel to his writing. He already has a feel to what he wants to show to his audience and to show to potential readers. And on top of that, he's smart enough to know to be in cahoots with artists like yourself that can make him look better visually, because his are just words. So he needs – it's like you'd have somebody that writes a kid's book. Like, you can write a kid's book, but if you don't have somebody drawing or painting the illustrations in the book, it's just a story that you need somebody to draw the little bunny rabbits, and then it has a style. So he's wise in the way that he marketed himself by basically enlisting all of these artists that want to – you guys are promoting yourselves. He's promoting himself through his work, through your work. It all works out. So for me, I can sit back – and then take what you and other artists have done for him and his original core idea and make his brand stronger. And that comes into what, you know, Dan was talking about with making sure everything is consistent across the board. It's a little harder to do with getting different styles of artwork from different people, but if you don't use that in the main branding, you can actually use that, I mean, as a like, because he does everything with episodes and he does with different stories. It's like, you know, you don't, it's not going to be like the 50 Shades of Grey where every cover has the same thing on it. And he's not trying to go for that with his thing. He's
tackled, you know, had people give him artwork. And I think if he ever had books that he had covers for, they would have that different artwork for each one until he found an artist that was like, this is my artist. This is what I'm going to go with for my series or whatever he's going to be writing for. But for me, from the outside marketing, you guys are doing an excellent job already. You guys just need to get your work out there to see, to people. So for Dan, being visual and getting people to see him and hear him read, because his voice is great, is what he needs to do.
That's right, baby.
No, I mean, because you're not a writer.
Right.
And that is, so you have an advantage over a writer that is too shy to talk.
It helps that, yeah, I mean, it helps to have a voice that is designed for narration. Right. And to be able to have, I have a background in theater and I read a lot and I watch a lot of movies and I listen to a lot. I mean, I grew up listening to a lot of audio presentations. So, I mean, a lot of the old time radio stuff and, you know, I mean, I used to listen to the radio constantly. So I kind of understand the nuances whenever you're trying to narrate something and get emotion across to it. Not everybody has a voice, you know, I mean, everybody has a voice, but you know what I mean?
not necessarily.
I'm very lucky in that regard that I do have a voice that is usually pleasing to listen to most of the time, unless I drone on and on and on. But whenever I'm telling a story, usually it's okay to listen to. Unless I try to sing a song or something. We don't want that. No, that'd be bad. but yeah, I mean, it's a great collaboration when you understand how all those components fit together, because you have the written word and then you have the audio translation of it. And then on top of that, you have music that adds, it makes my job easier because music is very visceral. It carries a very strong emotional content, whether it be something that's supposed to be frightening or something that's supposed to be joyous or whatever, music can very quickly convey that. We all have, you know, you can hear a few notes of something and know kind of what the direction of it is. And I feel it's the same way with visual art, because it's something that we're very visual creatures. And there's a lot of times when you see a particular image, a good logo, a good cover, a good piece of artwork, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. I think it's worth a lot more than that, because that image itself can convey a story. I'm stimulated visually to come up with ideas. And whenever we are working on The Lift or The Wicked Library, and I'm working with the composer, Nico, a lot of times I will take the images that I get from Jeanette or whatever artist I'm working with and share that with him, because, you know, we all feed off of each other, you know, so that image can inspire him to go in a different direction with the music, and it can inspire me to go in a different direction with the way that I narrate a piece too. So it's all a really cool synergy where we all work off of each other.
I think you guys are doing well with it too. I like the way that you guys, you know, that you are branding your stuff. I mean, I've helped you a little bit, but that's the easy part. Like, you know, fill this space with some words. I can do that. But you already have the feel for what you want your branding to be. So,
yeah, I mean, I try to make sure that whenever I'm working on putting together an episode of The Wicked Library, we'll just use that for an example. I'll take the story and I'll try to find as I read through it, like, what is the core of this story? What image from this story really solidifies and jumps out to me? What do I see in my mind whenever I'm reading it? And, you know, a lot of times I'll share the entire piece with the artist, but I try to also give them some direction, you know, like, this is kind of what I'm picturing. And sometimes I'll draw a little stupid stick figures because I'm not an artist, or I'll throw some stuff together.
You should release those.
You absolutely should.
Maybe next season I will. It's like, here's my original concept and here's what Jeanette made from it. That's awesome. From, you know, these three little stick figures.
It's in a documentary.
That's right.
The process.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's, and when I came to you for the logo for Ninth Story, I knew I wanted something that kind of tied everything together. And Victoria is a big part of everything that I do. And it's kind of like, I don't want to compare her to like Mickey Mouse, but you know, it's kind of like Mickey Mouse became Disney's core. It's like he Mickey Mouse was kind of the, I don't know, the amalgamation of everything that he was trying to convey, that sense of wonder and right. the cartoon and the childlike nature of things.
Sort of like your podcast, The Night Story with Victoria. Mm-hmm.
She's yeah.
like that.
So she means what's that?
Just like the whole thing with Disney.
Yeah. I mean, she came from Ninth Story, and I knew she had a bigger story. So that's where the lift came from. But I mean, you know, in doing The Wicked Library, they kind of all fit together because it's all in that speculative fiction horror realm.
So you ever think for elevators?
Sure. Okay. Why not? I've always liked the number 9 for whatever reason. And I like words that have multiple meanings. So a story is another word for a floor in a building. And story is also, of course, a story. So it kind of all tied together through that.
I made that connection.
Yeah, right.
Light bulb moment brought to you by. Yes.
That's right. That's why the ninth story every season is really special. No, I don't get to that level with it. No.
P.S. If you hear Noah's Ark being built outside of my apartment,
yeah,
that's what's going on.
Awesome.
Well, there's just a lot of drills and hammers and things. Yeah, see, they'll just float down on Noah's Ark.
That's right.
Actually, I don't know what they're building. I think it's a fence.
So we started to talk about you painting a tree.
Yeah, I totally let you go away from it.
I know, but I remembered. See?
So we're going to come back. And, yeah. I've never heard the tree story, and it sounds horrifying, legitimately.
For an artist, it would be. I could see, yeah. I mean, when our good friend, the stepfather, Mike, was telling me about this, I was like, yeah, this sounds awful. So let's relive this awful memory of yours, because that's what we like to do on The Night Stories. We like to dig deep like Barbara Walters and see if we can make you cry.
There are points in my life that I decided to do things and then regretted them. And that would be one of them. Because Al, the newsman on Caveman Mafia's podcast, his parents, I've been friends with him since the dawn of time. And I'm good friends with his parents and we'll hang out all the time. And
not anymore.
And his parents, no, they moved from that house anyway. So his parents were like, they got this idea of, hey, we want a tree mural painted on the wall and the ceiling, because they're repainting, they're remodeling their house and repainting and everything. And I'm like, I don't really like doing murals because eventually they're going to paint over it. Like, I know this. Because in college, I painted one in the hallway in the dorms, and lo and behold, they ended up painting over that too. And I loved that mural. It was right next to my room and had like all kinds of Enigma stuff in it from the band Enigma. I was like, this is awesome. And then he painted over it, and I was so angry. So it doesn't get any easier. The rejection of, you know, we have to paint this, right? It's not anything against you. It's not like they're going to tear the wall out and then put it up like in the middle of one of the gardens or something. Oh, look at this mural. It's so good. We're going to knock the wall down.
We're going to save
that. Yeah. No, that's not how that happened. So Al's parents wanted me to paint this, and I said, oh, okay, whatever. So I painted it, and they eventually painted over it. And it like it was sort of like they just keep bringing it up. So I mean, it's not as horrible, but it's one of those things that I they never let it go. Because when they moved into their new house, of course I get razzed about it, saying, oh, we were going to have you paint, you want to paint a mural? And I'd be like, I ain't ever painting a mural for you ever again.
How long did they have the mural before they painted over it?
A few years. I think they had it for a few years.
Okay.
I don't think.
And you didn't get paid for this, right?
Oh, no.
This was a labor of love. Oh.
This was a labor of trying to do something for Al's mom.
Yeah. See, so I can see how that stings a little bit. Like, if you were paid for it and someone painted it, you'd be like, well, I got my money at least.
Yeah.
So, like, they made a bigger deal about it than I did, because I learned how to get over things and whatever.
So I heard you're going to paint a mural for the stepfather of a scene in Venice his upstairs.
No, I'm not doing that. No.
Why? Because he'll paint over it?
He will paint over it with, like, green and gold. And
I don't think he would, though. Knowing him the way that I do, I think that would be something that until they sold the house, he would keep it there.
Yeah.
And they're not selling the house anytime soon.
I have not painted in so long, it's not even funny. Like, I just don't do that anymore. Mm. I appreciate it, but I just don't do it. If I can do it on a computer like Jeanette does, I'd do that.
There you go.
So, I mean, it's so long. It takes so long to paint and draw now. Who has the time?
So do you paint and do you draw with your daughter? Is she getting to that age yet?
She's starting to play around with crayons, yeah, but mainly to draw on the piano.
To draw on the piano. Well, you just paint over top of
she's
it if she does that.
She's combining both music and
break
art.
Her heart.
Yeah, so she's trying, but we'll see. She likes cartoons, and I was into cartoon.
Why don't you let her paint a mural on the wall?
She's going to end up painting it on there anyway.
And then you can paint over top of it just to show her what it feels like.
Crushing.
See, kid?
I'm hoping that I don't do that to her.
Oh, I will say the one thing that is good about my background is working in film and theater. You paint things specifically to have them be torn down. So you get really good at not being emotionally attached to most of your artwork.
Yeah, I was always emotionally attached to everything I did because it was time consuming. So I found, you know, when I did illustration or did any painting, you know, at IUP, because I went to IUP for fine art and I did painting and stuff.
That's Indiana University of Pennsylvania for anybody who does an obla.
Yeah.
I did an obla. But Thank you for translating.
You're welcome.
I did painting there and I cared about everything that I did. I think I cared too much. Probably a good reason why I got out of it because I just can't handle, like, it's too emotional. You know, I can't do that on a day-to-day basis. And even when I do work now, if I spend too long on something and I care about it and a customer changes it, I'll really just,
yeah,
it'll change my mood and I'll be like, yep, you're getting impact with a drop shadow. Screw you. If you don't like it, you're getting Arial and Times. That's
nice.
Your two fonts.
Yep.
So do you still do stuff on the side for yourself? I mean, do you have a sketchbook or anything that you work in?
Not really.
No?
I doodle a little bit, but that's nothing to, nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
You really do get emotionally attached to this stuff. Are you afraid to like sit down and just draw for an hour? What prevents you from doing that? I'm just curious I can tell that you're passionate about it.
Oh yeah.
And I can tell that you love it.
Well, the same thing with music. I play guitar and sing and stuff and I've been, you know, in this band or that band and I can't get back into it because, well, one, time is like I work and then I do freelance design in the evening. So, I mean, your free time is your free time and you could choose to work in it or not work in it. So it's an excuse. I could find time to draw or could find time to paint or could find time to play guitar. And I end up not because I think I get too invested in it. And then I'm disappointed when I come back out like this. I mean, I haven't done artwork in so long. And I think it's mainly because I do it all day in some form. And it's enough that I don't like feel like necessary to spend more time on it for enjoyment because I have other things that I would rather do for enjoyment than that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a mix there's a balance to that. I mean, I do technical writing during the day.
Right.
So to me, writing for pleasure is completely different. Because I'm telling a story rather than giving you step-by-step instructions on how to do something.
Right.
So,
well, I think it's there in the back of my brain to do that and to like do those things, my creative side, but then it hasn't manifested yet.
I challenge you, Greg.
Oh no, I don't like
to go out and get it. To go out and get yourself
a
sketchbook. No, go out and get yourself a sketch pad, man, and you know, like take an hour a week and
draw
something.
What people are doing, like what Jeanette's doing. When I saw the video of you doing it, I'm like, that's so awesome. I wish I could do that, and I don't have the. I feel like I use the excuse that I don't have the time, but I don't invest the time in it.
I hear you're very talented.
I was talking to John Towers about that because John's very talented. I mean, with his comic book, right? And I used to do that kind of stuff too. Like,
yeah.
So,
he comes from a design background too. I mean, he did the graphic design route as well.
Right.
Because he wanted to be an artist that made money.
Right.
But we can, I mean, I think that there is a way now, especially now with the way that things work, there is definitely an opportunity to be, I mean, there are artists out there that make a good living.
I wouldn't do it for money anyway. Like that, I make enough money. I don't need that. So it's the concept, like, I just have to get over that, you know, like that Kennywood thing with the bowling ball, how you have to get it over there and keep it in the thing and not have the ball come back.
Kennywood is a local amusement park here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, United States and Europe.
It was a local drop. I'm sorry. Well, they probably have other amusement parks.
I'm just imagining like bowling balls and trying to keep them places. And it is amusing.
Okay. Just so with there's that this much little, information. There's this little carnival game where it's a rail.
It's rigged.
And you roll a bowling ball over a hill, and if it rolls back over, then you fail. But if you can keep the ball in the dip on the opposite side, then you win.
That's like a twisted ski ball.
I feel like I always end up with myself. I jump. I go, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm excited about this. And then the ball comes right back over the hill, and I'm back into my regular day-to-day routine. So it's hard for me to keep invested and excited about playing guitar or doing artwork. I mean, it's there. I mean, like, I know that I could do it. And as far as the skill, you don't forget how to draw those things. And now with the digital stuff, I could, fix.
Hey, Greg, would you like to do a cover for The Lift next year?
I don't think my style is the same thing as yours, though. Like, I know what your feel is. I don't think I'd draw that.
Oh, I have many different artists.
If it doesn't have Transformers in it, I don't know if I could do it.
Oh, well, I can write a Transformers episode for you.
There you go.
Something with Optimus
this
Prime.
This is when the elevator comes to
Autobots,
life.
Autobots, roll out. Optimus Prime. Autobots, regroup. I'm like Optimus Prime.
As long as the elevator is fueled by Energon, we'll be okay. No, I
perfect.
Bring the Energon cubes quickly, Autobots.
I don't know what I would draw anyway. I'm just.
Oh, I usually give direct. I usually give some direction.
Yeah.
As I showed you earlier,
I'll make sure I intentionally mess it up.
Of course you will, because that'll be passive aggressive bullshit.
The shape of a triangle. You'd be like, "What am I supposed to do with this?" I know you can work with it. You're good.
So that's actually a good segue into something that I wanted to ask you, Greg, which is like when you
some dude, oh. some guy. You're Greg Zoltair. You?
Okay, what's Bob.
Lay it on me.
So I wanted to know, like, since you have been feeling like your artistic side is
I don't know about
expressed through your graphic design, even though you're working within parameters, like when a company comes to you and says, "Hey, I need you to design, let's say, the website," how do you kind of distill what they are, what they're doing, into the story of the website?
What?
Okay, so talking, I couldn't put together
When someone comes to you and wants a website designed,
yes.
How do you? I mean, unlike me coming to you and saying, "Here's my ideas,"
right?
Here's the parameters that I want, or maybe better yet, I mean, I'm sure you have stories like this where someone comes to you like, "I want this," and you either have to talk them out of it, or they come to you and don't know what they want. How do you extract from them what their actual story is and what they actually want it to be, even if they don't know? Because that's part of what you do, right? Is guiding the client to what they need, not necessarily what they think they want.
Right. As a graphic artist, I tell them what they want, and mainly it's what I want. I have learned in the years that I have done this, and my boss included, we tell people what we want them to have, and it's better that they have it that way. Very few people disagree with that, but every once in a while you get somebody that's like, I want to see it that way, and you give them that, and then it sucks, and then they come back to your idea. On many, many occasions, I have designed multiple concepts, designed the ones that I liked, then design the ones that they had the ideas for, implementing little images that they like or things that they think or fonts that they might think that they like, and then put it in there, and then it looks like a total clusterfuck, and then they come back to me like, lo and behold, they'll take like a month, and they'll come back and be like, yeah, let's go with that one, the original one. And I'll be like, yeah, I knew you were going to do that anyway. Stop wasting my time. So yes, yes, that I lead people to where I want them to go. As far as people, I mean, there's in my business, we're dealing with lower end customers. So like PPG isn't coming into my business and saying, hey, build me a website, or I need a new logo because they already got one. So
somebody like me coming in, one of the riffraffs, low end customers like me. Well, hey, Greg, I need you to design a logo.
Well, you're either talking, you're going to go downtown to a design firm.
No, I know what you're saying.
Going to charge you $50,000 for an identity package that really is just a PDF with your logo on it. I talk to my boss about this all the time. It pisses me off to no end. People come in, they're like, I want a branding guide. Fuck your branding guide. It's a fucking piece of paper, a PDF with your logo on it. They spend more time making the PDF with your logo and the colors and the backgrounds and everything just to tell you you have two fonts and your logo. Don't squeeze your fucking logo. That's it. Here's how you use your logo. Don't squeeze the logo. Don't stretch it. Don't squeeze it. Don't change the colors of it, because then the colors we picked for you aren't going to be in there.
So basically what you're saying is like the size of an image is important, that if you have certain parameters, you need to stay within those. You don't want to squish it.
I am kind of saying that.
Yeah.
But really actually saying that. Yeah, it pisses me off to no end, because I mean,
I have experience with that.
You deal with different types of customers. You have the people that come in that they have a new business. They have no idea what logos they build it. Like,
those are the best ones though, right?
Oh, cause I can guide them into whatever I want. Yes. And then you have people that already have an existing brand and want to rebrand.
Yeah, because they got their image out of clip art in Word.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I can tell you what, I can take clip art out of Word and make it look like something that you've never seen before, but that's a totally different story. But that's the difference between paying $5,000 for a logo and a branding package and paying $200 for somebody to design something for your business cards.
Yeah.
If you want a logo that is custom done artwork and a custom logo, pay for it to be pay an artist to have it done and then copyright, like get it, you know, trademarked and everything, mm-hmm. because then nobody else can take it. If you go onto like iStock or Shutterstock or whatever and you get a clip art, it, just because you bought it doesn't mean you bought the artist's right to use it forever.
Right.
So, I mean, we got into this just the other day at work because people are like, well, is it trademarked? Can I just, no. You're paying this much, $10 for a credit or whatever to buy it on here, and I can change the colors and move it around. But that doesn't mean you wouldn't go to New Hampshire and find a sign that has your same piece of clip art just changed in a color and moved around and go, oh my God, I'm suing that company. No, you're not. You know,
wait a minute. That clip art I used is being used on one of them there pornography websites.
Or have it on a pornography website, and I'm mad that somebody legitimate is using it. I'm mad. So, yeah, I would advise that if you're going to do something custom and you want it to be yours forever and you're going to get it trademarked and it's going to be that serious, fine. If you're doing a yard sale and you want a logo for your yard sale, you're not spending the money on it. So if I go into Word clip art and find something for you, you'll be happy with it and you'll shut up. That's just the way it'll be. Shut up and take it. It's all what people will pay.
That's what she said.
And I find with a lot of my clients, I say low end clients because we know you're not dealing with a $50,000 website. You're dealing with at most a couple $1,000 website just because of the hours involved in doing the maintenance and building.
No, I know what you mean. You're dealing with clients that don't have the budget and the buying power of PPG.
Right.
You're dealing with somebody that is running a home business or, you know, a smaller business where they don't have the type of money to invest that PPG or Nike and, you know, all those other places have.
Art departments.
Right.
With people like Jeanette doing artwork that they pay them $8 an hour to do what they should be getting paid $50 an hour to do, and then put it because it's in their department and they're making a salary and insurance and health insurance and stuff. They can pay them that, but as a freelancer, they should be making a hell of a lot more. Mm-hmm. But so they'll pay those people.
Greg has opinions.
Well, I love it.
I like it.
Well, no, it's just one of those things that I wish everybody got paid what they were worth.
Right.
Because I see the one thing that no one has enough of his time. So your time is valuable, whether you do it, you know, doing artwork or whether you do it graphic design or writing or narrating or whatever. Your time is the most valuable thing in the world. So hopefully you get as much as you can for it. But when you're in a business, I mean, I work both at a business and freelance, and it's a shame that I don't make as much as I do at work than I do there. But there's a lot of overhead there, and it's just there's rules and the way things work. But the clients that I deal with, they're just not. I mean, I don't know if I'd want that because I don't think. I guess I haven't really thought about it because, you know, when I went to IUP and we were doing all that stuff, they try to get you like, you're going to be in a downtown firm and you're going to be like doing these high end designs.
Ferrari.
No, it's not even that. They're not making it like you're going to be rich. They're going to make it like you're doing stuff for like Nike and you're in a magazine. Oh. And hey, if you can get into one of those places, excellent. But everybody else is working for a fucking newspaper. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody else is doing typesetting for a newspaper. That's where I started doing typesetting for a newspaper, where they go, you have a half an hour, cram all the shit into that space and don't make it look so stupid and don't have any typos. So you learn to do that stuff fast and make it pretty. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's so I'm kind of like one step up above that now where I'm like, I'll make things pretty in the time that I have for as little money as these people have. Maybe I wish that I could do those other things, but I would probably laugh at it because there's so much time wasted. Like I see people that have had these companies do these logo packages and branding guides and everything. And they're like, we spent like $100,000 to have this stuff done. I'm like, it's a joke. No, I mean like, la, la, la,
la, la. Exactly.
And they come and they,
look at me. I've spent.
Right. And then those people, those businesses come to us to fix it.
Yeah.
Oh,
like, okay. So, we're getting things done. We're fixing all this work for these people that made this huge amount of money on the design. Then it's really not that good. And all they did was take a couple shapes and throw your text in there. You know, like I'm not impressed by that.
Yeah.
But there is a lot. I mean, there's a lot to be said. Like if somebody was doing what I was doing, and if I had an art department for a business and I pulled in an artist like you're doing for your podcasts, that would be amazing. Because if you were making money at the business and you could pay these artists to do custom artwork, that artwork is yours. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're paying those artists for the artwork. They're getting they're getting paid and their artwork is getting shown. And you can give them art credit. Like I always look at like things like UPMC and those bigger companies like hospitals and stuff that show like custom artwork, like art, like paintings and stuff. So the artist is getting recognition. They're getting their artwork out there on really nice big pieces, marketing packages, and they're getting paid, and then the marketing pieces are accessible and they're unique. I would enjoy to do, but that's not the world that I live in and where like the level that I'm at with my stuff, so I'm stuck with making the best out of a pile of shit usually.
So how important is branding for an independent writer, artist, creative, you know, podcast? I mean, for me, I think it levels the playing field because the goal is whenever you are starting out is to look bigger than you are. And a professional image, a professional logo, professional letterhead, business cards, level the playing field between you and someone who's been doing it for 10 or 15 years.
Right. Well, I totally agree with the make yourself look bigger than you are, because that's how you get your stuff seen. Because if you're a wallflower, you're going to be dead before they notice your stuff. And that's a shame with art in general.
How often do you recommend to your clients that they update their branding or update their website? I mean, website, I guess, is a separate issue, but that's still a question, too. Like, how often should you be updating your website and your look and your feel?
I would suggest that any chance that you get to add, like for websites, adding content to your website is every chance you get. It's invaluable. I mean, just if somebody that blogs is getting ranking over somebody that just has their website up for 5 years with a phone number on it, it's just because everybody's paying for ad clicks and all this other stuff. And, I mean, rating wise, I think people that just are on their websites, putting up their artwork, putting up their stories, there's stuff going on. They're on social media. The more activity, the better. As far as print media.
Yeah, because Google ranks that way, don't they? By like how active your site is. I mean, I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't know is that your search engine ranking is based upon your activity.
Right.
And also how often you link out to other.
There's a bunch of criteria. Yeah. And then you can pay for that stuff and get ads and pay-per-clicks and stuff like that. And my clients, I always tell them it's not worth it because they'll come to me and they'll be like, I want to be first in Pittsburgh for coffee cups. Whenever you put in coffee cups, I'll be like, go talk to somebody else because that's not going to happen. You know, like, let's reality will set it and be like, okay, I want to come at first in Pittsburgh when I search under Pittsburgh, like for just Pittsburgh. No. Reality check.
Not unless all you're doing is blogging about Pittsburgh and then having the social media.
Or you murdered somebody in Pittsburgh. Name Pittsburgh. And your name is Pittsburgh. P. Pittsburgh.
But you also blogged about murdering in Pittsburgh, that person named Pittsburgh.
And you were in the news. And yes. So
then
you'll come
up first.
But these people, my clients are usually sitting back going, refresh, 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 refresh. I want a hit counter. I'm done talking to you. You want a hit counter, I'm done talking to you. If you need to sit there and look at how many people clicked on your website every 5 seconds, you're not doing enough on your website to warrant it.
Yeah.
Because you're spending that time when you could be doing something else, like making an article on Facebook and tagging.
Yeah, I mean, stats and numbers are important. It's like, where is my podcast popular? How many downloads am I getting? That stuff's important, but some people get obsessed with that.
And that's
easy to do.
Yeah.
Well, the concept of websites in general, I find that a lot of people don't even need them. They just want them. They want them just to have them.
What's that? Just having a website?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, is it not an important part of your branding and your mark?
No, not all people should have one.
Really?
Right. It's just a waste of money for some people that don't. Because you have to. It's
so me as a writer, should I have a website?
Oh, hell yes.
Okay.
Because
Jeanette is an artist. She should have a website.
Right.
Somebody out there that's making a podcast, obviously, they should have a website. Right. I mean, iTunes is king. I mean, you're going to go to iTunes or one of these other podcatchers. But once someone is a fan of your show, they're going to want to dig a little deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out
of your cupboard. You don't need a website yet. You have 20 flavors of jelly and jam.
I need a Facebook page, right?
What are you going to
here's my new batch of jelly.
I got new blueberries. Look, if you want to look bigger than you are and you want to sell it, a lot of people aren't ready for that.
Yeah.
So they're stuck in the middle. It's like a mullet, sort of like, you know, like they have short, you either have short hair, that shit hair stage, which is a mullet, or you have long hair. And most people are stuck in that shit stage where they're just like, I don't really need the website. I'm not ready to add content to it, but I better buy my domain because it might not be there. So I advise for those people, buy the domain. Once they have sales that are offline, unless they're doing online sales, then they're building their business around a web. Like if she's selling jelly exclusively online, of course she's going to need that as a platform. But if you're just doing that and you'd be like, I have yard sales every week, I'm going to have a website.
No. But do you actually get people coming in? They're like, I'm going to have 7 yard sales this summer. I need a website.
No, but I've had,
thank God,
I've had clients that want to put all this energy into getting rankings.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Or nothing.
Yeah.
You can get the same contact information, the same hours, the directions from Google.
Yeah.
Because your business, if you do not have a Facebook account or you do not have a website, Google will populate it with the information for your address and your business and your phone and your hours without you. Facebook, it'll put a location. It'll make a Google location for your business until you actually claim it as the business owner.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's the world is going without you. It's moving forward without you. So if you want to spend, like I tell customers, like if you want to spend $500 to $1,000 on a website right now, I'm going to take your money, but we don't have any content.
Right.
Like you're just going to have a one page, I bought my domain, whoopity-doo, and you're never going to update it. And then you're going to go back and the rankings aren't going to matter because nobody's going to your site.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's kind of the same thing that we look at it for like writing or art or whatever. It's like, don't just build a website and say you're a writer. and put it out there. Like, actually spend your time writing first. Like, have something to market, you know, like have a podcast to put out there, have a book to put out there, have a collection of short stories, something, you know, I mean, if you're going to be sitting there and if build a website and publish a new story once a week or something like that, that's different than like putting together a website and going, okay, now I need to put my picture over here. Like, fucking write something.
Or the way around that, as people that are artists and writers and creative people, pay somebody that knows how to market you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are people that do that for a living. If you don't want to be bothered with social media, if you don't want to be bothered with website development and marketing, there are people that do that for a living that make you look better than you are.
What about what if you're new? What if you don't have a lot of money? What if you're an independent with this is not your primary job yet.
To the mullet phase.
Okay.
There's going to be a shit phase where the hair is just not going to look good. And that's going to be that phase. And you got to grin and bear it and get through it. And hopefully you come out on the other side with nice long locks of hair. Or you could give up and then cut it off. And then you're a short haired person again. But I don't know. I have lots of opinions on this stuff because I deal with this every day and I have to talk people out of spending money when they don't really need to.
Well, no, I think that's good because that's
people's money when it, I mean, I should be that way because that's what they teach you in college. Go out and get a job. And no matter what you can do, if you can make money off somebody, make money off of somebody. But I've doing it for so long. I'm just like, this doesn't need to be done. I mean, we could do it more efficiently and I could save you money because I've spent so long saving people time and money with designs that now I'm not in that mindset of, I'll do you a $15,000 logo branding thing. No problem. And I'll just mark everything up and whatever. No, I know what I'm worth. I know what my time's worth. I know what I can do for you. Give me your budget, and I know what I can do for you in that. You're not going to get that from everybody because you go to the Art Institute and stuff, and those people that are doing graphic design are taught to, I'm going to make as much as I can off of this one client. And it sucks for the clients that have to deal with people that are all about the money. Like, I guess in a way, I'm all about the art end of it. I want them to have a perfect piece. I want them to be happy. I don't even charge people until, like, for my freelance stuff, until the job's done, which sucks because you should really get paid before the job is done. But
yeah, you should.
I'm so, like, I think that they'll like it so much and I want them to be happy with the work so much that I end up saying, no, I want you to be happy before you pay me. I wish everybody was like that, but that's not usually how the world works for this hiring.
You definitely still think like a fine artist you had before
about the print stuff and logos. And how often you should revamp that. That's based off the business. Because you can look at your own marketing materials and go, yeah, that's that green color that they used in walls and carpeting in that era. And I really need to change my, you know what I mean? Like, because your business will go through styles.
Yeah.
And it'll, like, when you design stuff, it'll be like, here's photos of people wearing plaid. And I need to get those off there now. And if your logo looks like it's dated, then... I mean, it's all based off of, you know, it depends on the business too. Like if you're a really, really higher end business, you're going to have that stuff implemented in there to do a change every couple of years. If you're a small business, that logo is very, very important to you because you spent a lot of money branding it and getting your identity down. So you're not going to just up and change. You don't have the money to just say, I'm going to totally make a new look for myself because at that point, nobody's going to know who the hell you are. So you might as well keep your logo the same because the rebrand's probably going to hurt you for a little bit more than it will help you. I'd say reevaluating is important. But unless you have a lot of money, the total redesign, like a rebranding of logo and stuff, it only comes into play whenever it looks dated. And hopefully when you had it designed, they designed that in mind not to make something that looks dated, like something that could look dated. Do you know what I mean by that?
I do.
That makes sense.
Again, you can have those people that have drive-ins that have logos that already look dated, and they're always going to look dated because they're drive-in logos.
And that's the idea.
That's the idea, and you never really have to change those. So what was your question, Jeanette? Sorry, I talk a lot.
He's like a lawnmower. Why don't you get him started?
I think I lost track of what I was going to ask.
That's what she said.
You've dropped a lot of good thoughts there, though. Like, the one thing that I was just going to add was that one thing that a lot of us creative types have over like regular companies is we are making things, so we at least have content going for us. So, like you were saying, like just having a website, if you're not actually producing anything, is worth nothing.
Right.
Whereas for writers and artists and other storytellers, that most of the people who listen to this podcast are making things or want to be making things. Would you say that them having a website is good because they're going to start populating it with the stuff that they're making?
I think getting your domain the way, the one that you want, and securing that is always good if you're starting a business, whether you're doing artwork and you have getting domains now is a wise idea because somebody else will buy it and park it and you'll pay way too much for it if you want it after that.
Oh,
point.
Yeah.
And then don't start dicking around trying to buy your domain name and then forget about it because I'm pretty sure they'll see that and buy it anyway. Like, I don't know if it's a fact, but I wouldn't want to take that risk of like GoDaddy seeing that there's somebody trying to put in there that they want this domain, then backing off and wanting this domain and backing off because they're a company and I'm sure they have parking companies that buy them and just park them to make $1,000 instead of $7 out of it.
Yeah,
I can't confirm that.
Back when Haunting TV was a YouTube channel that my husband and I made, and we were looking at hauntingtv.com, and then suddenly that was bought, and they wanted $5,000 for it. So we're like, fine, it'll be hauntingtelevision.com.
Right. Right. I always tell people to buy it when if you want it, don't dawdle on it, especially if you're typing in searching for it.
Mm-hmm.
Buy it when you like instead of waiting on it. I mean, it's you can always let it lapse if you don't end up using it after a year. I mean, it's really domains are cheap.
Yeah, they are.
But building the actual website, I mean, it's going to go on a per person basis. I mean, if you're looking at in the upcoming year, you're going to start making a lot more pieces, and you are going to be at shows and people are going to be seeing your work. There's no reason why you shouldn't promote it on the web. I mean, that's what the world is now, Facebook and a website. Then again, there are some people that really don't need a website and really just need to promote themselves on Facebook, and they can show their work on Facebook as long as they don't do it as a personal page. I think they're fine. A lot of people make the mistake of making a personal page, putting all their business stuff on it, and then it's really hard to segment the audience when you're putting pictures of you at like an amusement park, and then the next thing you're talking about coupons for work. So I try to stress, like, I've learned from people making mistakes. So more than just graphic design and web design, of people making mistakes with their business that were like, this wasn't the wisest choice. We could have stop this by making this choice earlier on. But then again, things have changed with fan pages and business pages. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get caught up in that, where when it started, there really wasn't very much available with Facebook. And now they have a full-blown like fan section, and you can promote ads and boost ads and whatnot for businesses. So, as things change, you should keep up on that, or pay somebody that's going to keep up on it. Or just not be surprised if it's changed and you're not getting quite the reaction that you used to be getting from it. So, but
yeah, I'm part of a blogging group where they're just like, hey, let's share about what we're learning about blogging. And a lot of them were getting a lot of traffic from Pinterest specifically.
Right.
And then Pinterest changed their algorithm, and suddenly they're like, my traffic has dropped half, like 50%. What do I do? It's like, well, we learn what's next.
Right.
So I guess
or try something else.
Or try something else. What's the next thing? Blab? Right. Okay, let's go. There's always new.
You really kind of just have to be right. You have to be on top of. I mean, with social media, it's changing. It already changed. It just changed. Sorry,
it just changed.
We changed while we were talking about it.
Snapchat. So, yeah. What's that? Psh, next.
So you just got to do your best, or you pay somebody that says they know how to do that stuff, and they keep ahead of it, and you make sure you don't pay them more than what you're getting out of traffic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's all.
For those of us out there that don't know where to find those kind of people, how do you find someone who would be able to help you with the social media part of things?
Oh, geez. I have a person that I work with that it does social media. I'd imagine.
Just call Greg.
Just call me.
Call Greg. Gotcha.
And Greg will hook you up.
555 Greg. That's
five,
right.
555 Greg equals awesome.
That's terrific.
Just keep dialing until you hear someone talking.
Right.
Hello.
You've
it's
just
me.
Reached Greg.
One thing that I've found in my experience with just doing everything nowadays is somebody has already done it before you. So I hate to say this, just Google it, because somebody else has done it before you. You want to fix something, somebody else has done it before you.
Yeah, there's probably a YouTube video to show you how to do it step by step.
There's a video about going and looking at YouTube videos about Googling things. It's all there. You just have to know how to get the, you know, how to understand the information. And if you're not a total dumbass, you should be able to do that. So,
well, that would be all our listeners. They are not total dumbasses.
That's right.
We only have smart listeners here.
It's true.
Well, that's good, because then they wouldn't be lost.
That's correct.
But yeah, I mean, the world is out there. It's the
thanks, Dad.
All kinds of information. If you're looking for promoting stuff on social media, there are 1,000 people that would do it for you right now, and they're in your email box right now telling you how they will do it for
you. I'll tell you one resource you can use. How to Draw Comics the Stigmata Way. If you head on over to YouTube and you look that up, John Towers is a machine at social media. There's a ton of stuff on there, like Instagram, Pinterest, all that stuff. There's strategies on there, and they work.
It's true.
Tested, approved.
Tested and approved. So I have a question for you, Greg. You said you were a failed artist. So you started out as an artist.
And I don't know about a failed artist.
Well, you decided exactly. That's what I mean. You said that you gave up on it, and that this was before we started recording today. You said that if you had another go at it, you might be able to do it differently because you have a lot of knowledge that you've acquired in working in the marketing and graphic design sector.
I would not take any shit.
Yeah. So if you had a time machine and you could go back and talk to young Greg, what would you tell him? What would be your master plan?
I wouldn't have gone to college.
Okay.
I mean, right now.
Hear that, kids? Drop out.
No,
I'm just saying. That's what we say here at the Ninth Story. Drop out. No, I'm saying it.
College is very important to help you grow. But, well, if everybody could go back in a time machine with me and I could tell them things that I've learned, they would be fine. But as an artist, I don't need those people. I didn't need those people, and I thought I did.
Okay.
So, when you have a painter telling you, you need to do it this way, and I started to get that way in college. I had painting professors and stuff telling me, well, you have to do it this way, and you have to do it this way. And I'll be like, I think I overthought it. Like, I was like, why do I have to do it this way? I was starting to think outside of the box, and I wanted to do this differently. And I mean, I wasn't the kind of person that lived in the basement of the sculpture department, like until right. all hours of the morning with clay and whatever. But I tried that for a while. I tried painting till all hours of the night in the art building and being, I wasn't that type of person. So I'm more of a, I question everything. Like, why am I doing this way? Why is it that somebody can splatter fucking paint on a thing and all of a sudden he's a master or whatever when it looks like shit to me? And I said this to my teachers all the time, and they hated that because they want to be like, look, I paint angels and teacups. If you don't paint angels and teacups, you're not getting an A in this class. Well, mm-hmm. Fuck you. I don't want to be in this class anyway because I don't want to paint that. Like, I painted a waterfall, and this teacher was like, oh, it's just a waterfall. So I painted like I had – college was very, very, very trying for me because I painted like a classical art piece over top of it and left my waterfall in the back. And the teacher like laughed at me. He's like, what the hell is this? So I got mad about that, and I painted like big slash marks and blood dripping down off of it. And then I took that into class, and she kicked me out of the class. Because she got the message.
How dare you be creative?
Keep fucking with me.
How dare you convey your emotions through art?
And then I had a sculpture. My sculpture teacher did not like me at all. And I wasn't very good at sculpture. I didn't see the vision that all the other sculpture students had. So I was walking through a junkyard right near the college, and I was like, oh, look, it's a smashed radio. So I brought the Smash Radio in and I put it on a brick and called it Smash Radio. And I got an F on that project. But that's what everybody else's projects were, a bunch of shit. And I got an F for it. So then my next project, I got really creative. I took aluminum foil and smashed it on my face and then put a red light and a blue light next to it. And that was my art installation of my face in foil with lights on it. I failed that one too because I just I didn't get it. I didn't get it.
What you didn't know how to conform.
See, right. I didn't do the BS part of it well enough.
Right,
you needed to
right.
be so like, this is an expression of how the darkness in my life
right.
mashes with the brightness of it and right. creates the full depth of my soul. And then I'd be like, okay.
Yeah. So right now, I know where I am. If I did that right
you know
now,
what's important, Greg? Is marketing.
Marketing is so important. If I did Smash it's Radio so on important. A block right now, it would be so popular.
A+.
Smash Radio on a blog. Yes, it would have got an A+. He would have given me his job.
You, like, you could put that on Instagram or Twitter.
Well, I saved a lot of my artwork from college. And
just start randomly tweeting it.
Yes.
I started to go outside of the box. I did this painting in painting class that was like, was it 3 foot by 3 foot big, heavy wooden planks? And there's like 20 of them. And I called it clusterfuck because they all connect. And it was every thought I could put into a painting. So like there's a Optimus Prime is fighting a fucking lizard and there's a scarecrow and a big skeleton and the army over here and spikes and scorpion from Mortal Kombat. And it was awesome because like at that point I said, you know what? I don't care. I don't care anymore about this. I'm just going to put whatever I want on this. I got an A on it.
See?
There you go.
Right.
It's Gene Simmons fighting Optimus Prime.
This is an Optimus expression Prime. Of my pop culture and how confused I am about it.
Right. So
I'm the demon.
Arrogance kind of
I'm Optimus Prime.
Confidence pays off.
Yeah.
So as far as artists are concerned, you kind of need to be bigger than the other guy to get seen, to get visual, and then you back off whenever you're too arrogant and they want to like cast you out. So
long enough.
if I could go back in back to school, I would probably not go to school, and I would have found a way to make what I'm making in freelance design, doing what I'm doing now, then, and I would have made more money because mm-hmm. I paid a lot of money to basically. It was an emotional ride. I mean, you go to college for the experience and for you know growing, but what you actually learn, I learned more from working than I did from going to college, even about artwork.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean.
Yeah, but how did you learn how to drink beer in college?
I didn't drink beer until like my sophomore year. Like I didn't really drink, and then after that, I drank.
Yeah,
this is
wonderful. Where you been all my life?
It's snowing, and I'm doing snow angels in the backyard of somebody's house.
Why didn't I know about this before?
Yeah,
no one told me this was awesome.
I was not a big partier in school. Whether IUP, the college that I went to, is a party school or not, I really didn't party that much. That's because I was in the basement of the art department painting. No, I wasn't.
Optimus Prime.
That was like right at the end of it. Everybody is so emotional when you're dealing with artists. It's hilarious.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Looking back, if I could just step back and just laugh about everything that happened, like that particular piece. That happened in a class when my grandfather died, so I needed to go home to go to the funeral and stuff. And I came back, and my teacher really didn't like me because he just I really just hit a nerve to every art teacher because they were oversensitive anyway, being where they are, not being recognized because they were teachers and not showing their art as much as they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So whenever I came back and I said, "Well, my grandfather died," he wouldn't allow it. He thought it was a fake excuse. So I basically told him to go fuck himself and said, "And grandfather died," and then he wrote me this letter and like cried, telling me that he was sorry that about my grandma. I was like, really?
Yeah, I'd like to invite you to go and have sex with yourself because I think that's something that you could go and do.
College, it was fun.
College, it's true. It's a good growing experience.
Who I am
for
today?
Indeed,
quite cynical.
That's
and
Pine Mendes.
I guess I'm really confident too. I didn't realize how confident I am. I hope it's too not borderline arrogant.
You arrogant, egocentric son of a bitch.
That's right. That's right.
Well, if I'm understanding you correctly, it's necessary. Especially as a freelancer. Like, to get clients in general, you kind of have to walk in and be like, nope, I am exactly the person that you need to hire right now.
When I walked into my office that I've been working at for 10 years, I came in with a cat on my fucking resume. And I'm still working there. And they make fun of me for it, but they remember that I had a cat on my resume.
And they hired you.
I had a resume once that I sent out that was all in ransom note letters. That one didn't pan out too well. They didn't pay for that one. But that one was fun to make.
I would have cut
it all
up
and like I made it like it was a whole story too. I made it up like, if you don't, we're going to cut his fingers off if you don't call him for an interview, and I'll send them to you in a box. Maybe they took it the wrong way.
The cop showed up at Greg's house.
But I enjoyed making that. I did the whole artist thing for a long time. I fell into that, and I ended up wanting to make money. So
my resume is a comic strip.
I did do comic strips too. So
did those pan out?
I used to do Ant-Man. I used to do these little, it's just three little circles of ants, like just a head, body, and a bottom body and legs. And I used to do comics for that. I did all that stuff. Now it's like reminiscing. I feel like I want to go sketch something. I won't.
Good.
I'll go play it.
That's what we're about here. We inspired Jeanette. Well, we.
By we mean.
By we, I mean Gwendolyn Keist, who was one of my guests.
Right.
She inspired Jeanette to pull off to a truck stop and write for an hour.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So did maybe wrong. doing
horribly
this show.
Well.
Yes.
At least you're having an adventure.
I don't think I want to stop at the BP and sketch something on the back of my car seat.
No, but if I inspire you to go home and pick up a pen and a piece of paper and actually sketch something,
because I don't know what
then
I draw.
We've done our job here today, Jeanette. Right.
And I'd tell a story.
Yay.
About an elevator.
That's awesome.
That transforms.
I'll put it up on the website.
That's right. Elevator Prime.
That's fantastic.
Roll out Optimus Elevator Prime.
You
can we put
really
Gene
well.
Simmons in the elevator?
We're battling Optimus Primes.
Yeah.
Because I do Optimus Prime, but only a couple of phrases.
Okay, what are your phrases?
Megatron?
No, what's Megatron?
He's like the original.
Well, I know who he is.
One,
I just know Optimus Prime's voice.
No.
I'm Optimus Prime. Autobots, roll out. Roll out.
You going to try to do it too, Jeanette? Do you want to do three Optimus Primes in one podcast?
We'll
is too
see.
Many?
Let's see. Roll out. That's all I got. It's terrible.
Optimus.
I'm fired.
Autobots, roll a doobie.
Autobots, roll out.
Bumblebee.
No, not even. I'm the annoying human who's hanging out with the Autobots. Oh my god,
Bumblebee.
Somebody's about to smash me. Save me, Autobots. There you go.
Is that how that went? What episode was
I don't
that?
Know.
Then you got Megatron. He's like, Prime! You gotta do this.
Prime!
You know, I don't know how that guy has a voice after doing one line.
Megatron.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you do that well.
Frank Welker, Megatron was very, very raspy, and it just sounded like he was just like way in the back of his throat. I tried to do
Megatron.
Yeah.
I don't know.
See, you should do narration.
I should do voices
do some
or something.
Voice acting
you should do
or
voiceover
something.
Work.
You know, the thing about Kiss is...
I love that appreciation.
Kiss is like steak and ice cream.
I think we talked about
it. It's something for everybody. You know, Gene, you're right. You're right, Gene. It is. It's like steak and ice cream. That's right, Paul.
Do you do... what other impersonations do you do? I think we might have talked to this on another podcast.
I used to do Ronald Reagan.
How'd that work out for you?
Pretty poorly.
Jeanette, do you do any impersonations other than that really awesome Optimus Prime and that secondary character from the Transformers show?
No, I'm not so great at impersonations. No. I have a couple accents in my repertoire, but that's about it.
Like what?
Like Australian? An Irish one, I can slip into that one pretty easily, actually.
Oh,
that's because
that's
I
good.
Had a friend, her name was Fiona, and I spent a whole summer talking to her because I thought she was absolutely fascinating. So I kind of picked up on that one a little bit.
Wow.
And then I did a whole D&D campaign where my name was Avi, spelled A-V-I, because I thought that was clever. And then, of course, she was with this accent, and then I got really stuck into that. So whenever I do this accent, I think about that character, actually.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
We're bringing out the impersonations.
You keep your money, and I'll eat your baby. I want my baby back, baby.
Speaking of impersonations and funny people, I'm driving down your street, and there's a bunch of little girls playing on the street here, and I had my windows down, and I'm listening to Eddie Murphy Raw or Delirious, where he's talking about Ed Norton saying, "And you're going to fuck me in the ass," as loud as it possibly could be in my car, right at that's right when it hits past the three little girls. I'm like,
I'm going to bend over, Norton, and when I do, you start fucking.
As soon as I passed them, that's right what came out of the window. I'm like, and whoops. I look creepy. Just a little.
Hey, kids. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for listening.
That's right.
I do a really bad Harry Carey, a really bad Arnold Schwarzenegger, a really bad Bill Cosby, a really bad Sean Connery.
Sean Connery. That's right. It's a gentleman's club. Bring your ass close to my face.
I'm going to hit you right. What was it? My word on the other podcast was trying to get me in the mood to do it was ashtray. You got to get ashtray. Because you get your mouth in the position every once in a while. I can do Michael Caine. It's sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that go?
I can't do it right now. It's one of those things where you kind of have to be right in it. And then Batman. Everybody does the new Batman. Just growl and yell.
I do have one impersonation.
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
It's Samora. Ready?
Oh, fuck that shit.
That's not even a good one.
Is that from The Ring?
No, that's from The Grudge.
Oh, that's right.
There you go.
You posted that the other day. That was the Grudge versus The Ring, right?
I hate that noise. I fucking hate that noise.
There's my one impersonation.
My friend Al used to make that noise all the time just to piss with me. He said, "I'm just going to come to your house and stand out your window." One time, did I tell you, we went on vacation with them, and they drove past me in another car all wearing V for Vendetta masks. Fucking assholes. Stepfather, his wife, and Al were in another car, and they drove, and it was the middle of the night. So just imagine three V for Vendetta masks going past.
That's creepy as shit.
Doomed. Yeah. That's like what's going through your head is D-O-O-M-E-D. You are doomed.
So what's Harry Carey sound like?
I do the impersonation of the guy from Saturday Night Live doing Harry Carey.
Does it involve like cheese?
Third generation impersonation.
Does it involve cheese?
What's the guy? Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell?
Yeah, Will Ferrell's impersonation of Harry Carey. I do an impersonation of Will Ferrell doing Harry Carey.
Okay,
I don't know who Harry Carey is. I've never heard Harry Carey. But
seriously?
I'll
play him
Will
for you.
Will Ferrell's version on Saturday Night Live where he's like, "If the moon was made of cheese,
would you eat it?
I would. My friends call me Whiskers. Guess I'm curious like a cat." Crack open a Budweiser.
Jeanette, we're cutting the whole first half of this show. We're just going to sit here now with Greg and have him tell us things like Harry Carey.
Yeah, see, that's
perfect.
But that's I do impersonations of people doing impersonations because it's funnier. Mm-hmm. Like if I actually had to do, you know, which I wish you could do the impersonation of Morgan Freeman.
My friend Andy Dufresne crawled through miles of sewage. I used to, when I was a boy growing up in Georgia, I used to walk uphill in the middle of the night. People always said, "Morgan, where the fuck do you think you're going? It's the middle of the night. School isn't until morning time." I would then walk back home, crawl in my bed and think about morning. My neighbor, Andy Dufresne,
just goes off that on and on.
I keep going all night long.
They had a comedian do it once. He was just reading serial names or wrestler names, and it was like Macho Man Randy Savage, Bam Bam Bigelow.
Here. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I would touch myself because no one else wanted to. I'd lay there in the middle of the night looking at the trees that someone had painted on the wall, thinking to myself, I need to paint over top of this. Because it makes me very scared to sit here looking at the trees coming for me in the middle of the night.
Let's read a recipe.
A recipe?
Yes!
What do you want me to look up here?
Read a recipe.
All right, let's look up... how about crab balls?
Yes. Please do.
Crab balls recipe. Paula Dean makes delicious crab balls. Paula says in a heavy, deep pot, preheat peanut oil to 365 degrees Fahrenheit. For the tartar sauce, combine all ingredients into a food processor and blend to achieve desired chunkiness. Ah, man, you got me going. For the tartar sauce, combine all ingredients into a food processor and blend to achieve desired chunkiness. Adjust seasoning and chili until ready to use. For the crab balls, in a large bowl, moisten breadcrumbs with heavy cream.
Now you're going to get lost in a story.
I remember that bowl once.
In a large bowl, moisten breadcrumbs. You know the nice thing about bread? My grandmother used to make a delicious bread in the summertime. Sometimes it would be banana bread. Other times it'd be some kind of zucchini bread or whatever we had around the house that she might want to put inside a loaf of bread. One time I found her teeth in a loaf of bread. Grandma was a little absent-minded. So with the heavy cream, you mix in the remaining ingredients. Cream's nice. We used to get cream from the cows. I had my own cow once. I named that cow Andy Dufresne because Andy can be a girl's name too. Shape into balls about the size of a walnut. My balls are about the size of a walnut. Fry in oil until brown. Like my balls are brown. My balls are chocolate and they're salty. You can suck on my chocolate salty balls. Put them in your mouth and suck them. In about 5 minutes per batch, you can serve the crab balls while hot. Nothing like some hot balls with tartar sauce. Nice and creamy. Balls can also be made ahead of time and reheated. You can put them in your mouth and heat them up. House seasoning, 1 cup of salt, 1/4 cup of black pepper. 1/4 cup of garlic powder. Salt is good. I like salt. My daddy used to say if a man was worth his salt, he'd chase them off the back porch, but you never know. What the hell are we talking about here?
That was awesome.
Fresh lemon juice. Crab balls.
This episode is brought Morgan to you by Freeman. Crab balls.
I don't think I've left that
hard. The crabbiest of balls.
You know, the thing about balls is... my balls are a demon.
Ball one!
Ball two! Holy shit! A man can't run with 3 balls!
I'm gonna go home and paint or something.
You should.
I'm gonna go home and make some crab balls.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
And then paint those crab balls while you eat those crab balls. That'll be the most artistic.
I'm going to go hide them under a rock in a field with a tree. And hopefully something.
That rock has no business being there. It's black and shiny like glass.
I did not realize that your impersonation was so good.
Societies rise and societies fall. When the time comes, one society steps forward to build a better future. The Wicked Library, Kettle Whistle Radio, Night Story Podcast, Prog Watch, Red Horse Radio, The Lift, History Goes Bump. Listen, the M Writing Podcast, Society 13, Rebuilding Society, one podcast at a time.
As long as they are written down,
That's an awesome.
Oh, there she goes. She's got her ass right against his.
Yeah, she does.
Let me grind on it.
Peter, that's my name.